U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Well, if you hear that music, you know we made it to Friday afternoon. Welcome to the weekend. Steve Bertrand here in the Skyline Studio. Welcome as well, of course, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I don't know if that's mood music or not, but Larry Kudlow was talking about mood music earlier today, Steve Alexander, right? And that has to do with trade with China?
Yeah, he said the mood music is good right now.
is that like Dean Martin music, or what is good mood music, do you think?
I'm not sure what he means about, you know, he's known for his colorful quips about this, that, and the other, but he's known for saying
Nikki Haley was confused.
Yeah, well,
for that line, yeah.
Yeah, various things.
But this goes back to, we've talked about this before, and the markets are up on the mood music comments, apparently, or their retail sales are out too as well, right?
Yeah, that was fairly inconsequential. It was came in better than expected, but just a tenth of a point better than expected. But this is, you know, the stock market, I mentioned, has moved up or down on nearly every headline that has come across about U.S.-Chinese trade for nearly 2 years now.
And you're the expert. Why is that? That seems to me like we're just being fooled. I mean, I don't understand.
Well, you know, I think the Wall Street investors, the traders move on whatever the news of the day is, and there is an opportunity to make money. That's why they're there. So they either sell or buy based on what the mood music is. So that's, I guess, the only way to look at it. It's just an opportunity to make some money.
But it's not real music. I mean, it doesn't seem to ever come to play.
So far, that's the story, yeah. But maybe one of these times, the mood music will be accurate.
Yeah, okay. So, and you know, I guess sometimes, too, we confuse the fact that trading for long-term investment and then trading for a quick turnaround cash, and that's what a lot of these movements in the market are about.
Yes.
So we were hoping to connect with Sean Lewis. I don't know where he is from Channel 9 to talk about the opening of the new Starbucks, but I would imagine you will.
Man.
you'd have to travel a distance to get there.
I've got some FOMO going on. I really, for many, many years, I walked up and down Michigan Avenue right in front of the Crate and Barrel store there, and I'm really curious about what's in there. And, you know, I know people have been saying, well, it's just coffee. Are you going to go in there? Can it survive? Can a five-story building survive on just coffee? But it's got a lot more than that. It's got the bakery. It's got a bar.
It's got a rooftop lounge that they were going to open up. During the preview yesterday, they didn't show that. But, yeah, in the summer and spring, you'll be able to sit outside. And, you know, it's like anything else now. Restoration Hardware has a great restaurant.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Mean, I haven't seen it. I'll take your word for it. But, I mean, it's all about experiential events and trying to get people into buildings that way.
Yeah, it's a destination, sure.
I mean, I remember when the Crate and Barrel store was built. I think it was 1990. That was a huge change to Michigan Avenue.
That was really a landmark building there. And I was really sorry to see Crate and Barrel go. But this looks like the Starbucks is looking at some of the photos from the interior, and it looks like they've really done an amazing job. They have the a curved escalator going from first to second floor.
Well, then they've got tubes all the way through shooting coffee beans through different levels, which has got to be a gimmick, right? I don't think that's just done for efficiency.
No, I don't know.
And barrel-aged coffee. Can you imagine what barrel-aged coffee might be like?
I don't know. If I leave coffee sitting in the pot too long, it doesn't taste very good. So hopefully they've got a better way of doing it.
That might be carafe-burned coffee, though. I don't know. That's quite the same thing.
Oh, okay.
All right, so we're wrapping up on, where are we now? Halfway through November. 6 weeks left to go in the trading year. This is going to go down unless we have a December like last December as a pretty good year for the markets.
Oh, very good year for the markets. And some of the retailers are having incredible years. Target shares are up over 67% year to date. It's funny to see Amazon is probably the least successful of all the retailers so far. Its shares are up only about 17%. But Home Depot, as I mentioned, Target and some of the others have had just phenomenal years. Walmart included in that group.
All right, when you go out to dinner with your brother, do you split the check evenly or you divide? So if he orders, he tends to do the surf and turf.
I try to get him to buy.
Yeah, the whole thing, I see.
Yeah.
Quentin Frotrell, he writes the Moneyist column at MarketWatch. It's a really cool column. He's going to join us in just a couple minutes to answer that question.
Yeah, we just, when I go out with friends, my wife and I, Diane and I go out, we just split it.
Just split it evenly.
Yeah.
50, and get it
50.
Over with. Right.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to do that to the poor waiter.
Wait staff. Right.
Yeah. Wait staff. No. Come on. That's unless you're really going to give them a bigger tip for doing that.
Well, Steve Alexander, I cheated you out of some time at 11 o'clock. So thank you so much for spending the extra time with me this
Happy
afternoon.
To be here.
All right. We'll talk again soon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, I can't avoid the Irish. I was out with a guy from Hoth yesterday, and now on the phone line is Quentin Frotrell, who is the writes the Moneyist column for MarketWatch, but he's our favorite Irish contributor to the program. Welcome back, Quentin.
My pleasure. I hope you're not your only Irish contributor, but I don't mind. That's okay.
No, I did talk to one other guy once. So, yeah, you're good. You're doing
okay.
Good.
Okay.
So, explain for the people. We've talked a few times recently, but just tell people what the Moneyist is, because I want to hear your explanation more than mine.
Okay. So the Moneyist is a column I write for MarketWatch, and it's basically the etiquette and ethics of your financial affairs. So I don't advise people what to do with their money. I don't tell them to invest it here or there. That's not what we do. But I do talk to them about the relationships around their money. It's really, every column has some money element, but it's really about relationships as it is, as much as it is about finances.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. I enjoy it. I pulled a few that I want to talk to you about. One that I was teasing earlier just a couple of minutes ago. You write something pretty interesting about splitting the check at the restaurant. And I would imagine this, it depends on the crowd you're in, perhaps. I mean, I'm in my 50s, and I'm going out with another couple of, you know, relatively same economic standing. We pretty easily split. But more, you seem to be advocating almost dividing it up by the cost per person.
Yeah, well, it's more a question of, I mean, I always split it down the middle myself.
Right.
Unless somebody's had, for example, if somebody's had a lot of drinks or wine and I'm not drinking that night, then I won't really want to pay for their alcohol. But otherwise, if I'm having a salad and they're having a fillet steak,
right,
and there's a $20 or $30 difference, then I don't think I would like people to do what I would do in that situation, which is I would say, I'm going to pay for my steak. Why don't we split the bill per item on this occasion? But the letter was really about people who insist on doing it. And the woman who wrote to me was actually an Irish woman. And she said that she wants to pay for people because her apartment's too small to have dinner. And she gets upset that people get upset with her when she wants to split the bill, or certain friends, when she wants to split the bill down the middle. And she wondered, were they being a Grinch? And my point to her was, you know, when I moved to New York, I noticed, and I'm sure it's the same in Chicago, it's an expensive place to live, and I noticed how more people did itemize their bill, their checks,
right,
when they were paying for it, and because people watch their money and it all adds up.
Well,
so
you point out,
that's
too,
what the person wants to do, it's okay.
You had a great statistic about the fact that in this gig economy, incomes fluctuate. They fluctuate greatly.
Yeah, by as much as 25%.
Yeah.
That's when it, you know,
your number was more than a third of the households in the U.S. experience a 25% or more change in their income from one year to the next. That was a pretty amazing statistic to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if people, you know, freelance work flexibility, it's a really, you can't assume that everybody is making the same amount of money as you and are always comfortable to go to a more expensive restaurant, and you can't assume that just because they could do it this year, they can do it next month,
okay,
or even next year.
So maybe the takeaway here is if you have the bigger order at the restaurant, it might be incumbent upon you to say, hey, you want to split this evenly or itemize how we spend it.
Exactly. Leave it for the other person to make that call.
Okay. So there's that one, and then there's the column about a guy who wants to ask his girlfriend to marry him, but he's worried because his girlfriend's parents still control her checking account.
Right. Yeah, this is very common. You know, there's a lot of people, more than half of people say in one survey, that they're not going to marry somebody who has a large credit card bill or has a low credit score. Credit scores are increasingly important to people, and I sometimes see them online on dating sites. So I can see why he's concerned.
Let's go back there, Quentin. Like, Quentin, so you're saying that on like Match.com or places like that, they will list the credit score?
Some people will say they've got a good credit score. Yeah, they put in their personality type and then they add their credit score. They want people to know that that they're trustworthy and that they're reliable and that they're responsible. And I appreciate that sometimes credit scores can be, a reflection of all those things. We also want to, you know, if we're going to commingle our finances, we want to do it with somebody with whom we share the same goals, same financial goals, and the same values.
What about that whole love is blind thing? I mean, I can get it if you're carrying $50,000 in credit card debt. That's a big red flag. But, I mean, you would think love conquers, if not all, most.
Yeah, but what do people mostly fight about in marriage? Money. Money is one of the biggest reasons people end up, breaking up. I mean, it's finances are a huge stressor for marriages. So you have to be very careful that you're both on the same page. And with this fellow who wrote in, you know, my point to him was she didn't have a lot of life skills from her parents. So this is the time for her to learn. You don't want to become a proxy for her parents. You don't want to babysit her. You want her to stand on her own two feet. But this is a good exercise for him, too, because he gets to be direct and to turn his concerns into action. And then when they've done that and they've both opened up their bank accounts and laid out their plans and their goals, then they can figure out if they're on the same page and they want the same thing.
So does that ledger sheet, that balance sheet, come pre-engagement or post-engagement?
Oh, definitely pre.
You don't want to
offer anybody a ring before you have all of your ducks in place. Sorry for the cliche, but you really don't.
That's fantastic. So I would have never thought that. So before you even pop the question, have the financial talk.
Yeah, you want to get a sense of where they are in life. You know, there's a lot of people who marry people of different age groups. And honestly, you want to make sure that person, if you're 5 years away from retirement, your partner is 15 years away from retirement, it may not be the right time for you to get together because you may not want to still live in Chicago for 15 years.
Right.
You might want to move to Florida.
Now, you know, in this column, and the answer for this one, though, because there are concerns about her ability to manage money, you advocate that early on they keep their money separate and have separate accounts.
Right.
Which that always seems kind of hinky to me, but explain for me why that would be a good idea in this case.
So I think at this point she needs to become independent financially. Her parents still operate her bank accounts, which is very strange. But like I said, that's what she learned. So she needs to become independent before and prove that she can manage her own life before they start commingling their bank accounts. And as I said to him, apologies, I think there's a big truck, big yellow truck going by. As I said to him, people don't change. You know, you hear that all the time
right.
when people get together. They don't change. But people do change their financial habits. And in this case, it strikes me more as a financial issue than a character issue.
Okay, so last time we talked a lot about wills and things like that. But one more piece that I want to talk about with you is this guy who writes to you. He said that his sister died recently. He was going through her documents with his brother-in-law and found his mother's will or documents related to it and realized that his sister had cheated him out of inheritance from his mother.
Yeah, you would not believe how many times I get letters about skullduggery in relation to whales. And
it's amazing.
When I get tons more. The problem with wills and inheritance and all of that is there's a very short, most states, a very short statute of limitations, but there are loopholes when it comes to fraud. So it's absolutely, the takeaway I have for anybody who has a problem with a will or says, where's the will? That wills should be filed with the probate court. There should be a copy of the will, either with the bank or with a family lawyer. If a family lawyer, it may not always be honest as well. You have to take that into account. But it's always important to act fast. Consult a lawyer. There are always things you can do.
Quentin Fotrell writes The Moneyist at MarketWatch.com. Check it out. It's a great read. Quentin, great to talk to you, and I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It is 12:38. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, where the fall veto session is over, ended yesterday, and I'm not sure what Mayor Lightfoot came back with. There was hope for a casino bill. In fact, they introduced a revised casino bill to the House Executive Committee early in the afternoon yesterday, but apparently she wasn't able to muster the votes to bring it to the floor for full approval. I don't think she got the increased real estate tax either. We'll talk to A.D. Quigg about that a little bit later. A.D., of course, is a writer for Crane Chicago Business, and A.D. also is writing about the Uber-Lightfoot feud, and we'll see where that goes as well coming up a little bit later on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're hoping to talk at this segment with Mark Grant, who's the state director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, works here in Illinois. The national group has come out with its review and its study of small businesses and how they are seeing the economy in October, and the number was good. The index went up 0.6%, which I don't know what that means actually, but to a total of 102.4, historically looking pretty good. The uncertainty index actually dropped 4 points, which is good news because businesses, of course, want certainty more than anything else. And as that drops, that means good news for the businesses and economy heading into the election year. The other thing I took away from the report came from the chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Businesses, William Dunkelberg, has a couple of things to say. He says the economy will likely stay steady at its current level of activity for the next 12 months or so. So all of the talk that we've been hearing about a recession and things like that is not worrying the NFIB, at least. They say because Congress will be focused on other matters and the election coming up that things should be good. And he also points out, he says that any significant changes in trade when it comes to China will likely have more of an impact on Wall Street than it necessarily will on the economy. The NFIB says that the economy is looking good for the next 12 months or so. So if we can believe them, it's a sigh of relief, right? Things are improving. And so we'll talk to Dan about what it looks like here. I think we just have, or Mark rather, we have just national numbers, not state numbers, but we'll kick that around here. Mark, I think we're just connecting with him now. And talk about the small businesses here in Illinois. Well, let's see. Maybe not. Are we going to talk to him, Bennett? A.D. Quigg coming up a little bit later in the program. We'll get the swing as well. Steve Alexander is always there. You're like my guardian angel.
You're having some phone problems today?
Yeah, I'm not sure what exactly it is, but we're going to go. Mark Grant is on the phone line now, the state director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Mark, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so I was just summarizing the numbers while we were waiting to connect with you, and the bottom line is things are looking pretty good, right? People were talking about a recession earlier this year, but we're not seeing concerns about that when it comes to small businesses.
Oh, absolutely right. Our national survey that you're referring to has shown that small businesses are really bullish and that they're doing very well. Again, like you said, the talk of recession has gone away for the time being, and so they're feeling much better, way more optimistic.
All right, and so the big problem, though, as I understand it, is just finding workers to fill the jobs.
Yeah, you know, that's really, really right. I've been meeting with my members quite a bit lately, and that seems to be their number one problem, finding the qualified workers that they would like to have to be able to expand and grow.
Well, tell me,
they're struggling with that.
Mark, tell me about that. Who are these qualifications people are looking for? Who are these workers?
Well, you know, it spans the entire, you know, job spectrum. But the ones that I talked to are actually looking for some, you know, people to drive trucks, people to be welders. So some trades they're looking for, you know, construction trades are trying to find people. And then there's other folks, too, who are small businesses who are looking for people to do a variety of jobs and people who are actually just willing to show up and come to work, be on time, and learn the skills they need to have to be a productive worker for them. That's really what they're looking for.
And is it holding back productivity in the state?
Oh, certainly it is, among other things. But, yeah, I think that that definitely is creating a problem for our businesses who are in a position to be able to grow. They'd like to be able to do that. They've got a lot of work, and if they had more workers, they could be doing a little bit better, yes.
And I was there was a line in the study, too. It said, you know, it's no sense in spending money buying an extra tractor if you can't find a worker to drive that tractor. So there'd be more economic spending that way as well.
Well, you got that. That is very true. Same with some of our trucking companies. I got some small, medium-sized trucking companies who have trucks that are idle. They would like to put drivers in those, and they also would like to be able to add a few more trucks to their inventory so that they could have more products being shipped.
I know that the numbers we saw, the report was a national one, and there weren't state numbers available. But, you know, you're the expert here. Give me your read on the pulse of independent business in Illinois.
Well, you know, that's a very good question. And I can tell you this, that as many of them as there are ready to grow and would like to, there's just as many who are really frustrated with the situation in Illinois. They feel like that the politicians in Springfield are more concerned about finding ways to raise taxes and spend more money than they are in trying to pay off large debt that the state has and a growing pension crisis that's out there. And they're very frustrated with some of the what they consider to be lack of pro-business, pro-small business kinds of things that they would like to see. There hasn't been anything on workers' comp reform in years.
Right.
And every one of them will tell you that cost in and of itself is really, really hurting their bottom line.
Mark Grant is the state director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Sorry I was a little late.
It was worth the wait, Mark. No worries.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And here's now my favorite part of the show.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Oh, shucks. Not more bad news for the OG Outcome Health people. A former executive was charged with felony wire fraud this week after the courtroom documents showed that a number of execs, quote, knowingly devised, intended to deceive, and participated in a scheme to defraud Outcome Health clients and investors. The story seemingly gets worse every few weeks as the investigation churns on. The tough part is that the overall business is trying to push along, under new management, of course. Talk about your past haunting you. And shortly after the announcement of the city's Spanish newspaper, Oi, shut down, talks of another newspaper merger are buzzing, this time between Tribune and McClatchy. They're still only rumblings, but it would be to protect itself from the larger evolution of the publishing industry. The idea is that the bigger they are, the harder it'll be to make them fall. These are crazy times. Changes all over the place. You gotta keep up. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:52. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, let's go to the newsroom of Crane Chicago Business. A.D. Quigg is there. She has just survived another trip to Springfield. A.D., welcome back.
I was not actually in Springfield, but
oh,
I've been covering it from afar.
I see.
There's too much news in Chicago. I can't possibly leave or something will explode or catch on fire.
That's too bad, because I wanted to hear the update from the towns of El Paso and Pontiac and all of those in between.
Oh, darn it.
I'll have to wait for next time. Okay,
yeah.
So, you know, usually these legislative sessions end with, you know, a flurry of activity. It happened last night, but it wasn't anything to do with the vote. It was to do with the Senate president, John Cullerton, announcing that he's going to retire in about 6 weeks or so.
And yeah, in January, it really, it was a big surprise. So we had all been watching Springfield intently for the outcome of what Mayor Lori Lightfoot wanted in this veto session, which was changes for casino and real estate transfer tax. And instead, we all had to shift our attention really quickly about last night at 6:30 to the news that Senate President John Cullerton, who had been serving as Senate President for 11 years, had been down in Springfield for decades, and whose family has this storied history in Chicago politics,
yeah,
was going
right.
to retire. He's 71 years old, and he said, "I made a deal with my wife. Now's the time. I'll be gone in January."
You know, it's funny. I was surprised to read he was 71. I don't know why. I mean, it makes perfect sense, but I did think he was younger than that. So that sets up a fight for who's next, right?
Yes, yes, in a few ways. So not only who will replace him in the Senate, in his seat on the city's north side, but also who will be the next Senate president and lead the Democratic caucus down there.
Is it the sort of thing that he can name a successor and have that much sway?
So this is an interesting process, which we're seeing actually today happening to fill Representative Louis Arroyo's seat. So within 30 days of him stepping down, the Democratic committeemen that serve within his district have to get together and pick a replacement. So those folks are Alderman Tom Tunney from the 44th Ward, Lucy Moog from Lincoln Park, Paul Rosenfeld up on the north side, Scott Wagsbeck, and a few others. So they basically all have to get together and hear folks' applications. We're expecting quite a few Northsiders to jump in and want this seat. And then if, let's say, a state representative who wants to move over to the Senate gets that job, then that sets off another replacement process to fill that House seat. And then, of course, we'll have to see all of the jockeying from all the members of Senate Democrats to fill his role as the leader of the Senate. It'll just be a very interesting winter.
Okay, so, and I want to get on to the mayor and how she did, but Cullerton, you know, he certainly tried to move things beyond, but it always seems like Speaker Madigan still was the backstop there. Everything still had to go through the speaker, and I think maybe Cullerton might have been more willing to stay on had he had a more willing partner in the speaker's post. Is that fair or not?
I don't know about that. It is true that Cullerton has been kind of considered Madigan's second fiddle, I suppose,
yeah,
because Madigan really had a tight grip on his membership, and that wasn't just because he had a lot of money. It was that he helped folks get elected. Cullerton was a little bit less politically involved. We also know Speaker Madigan runs the state Democratic Party, but they also just have different styles. I mean, Madigan was a velvet hammer, and we've seen all these tributes pour out about Cullerton being a very reasonable, very friendly guy, and doesn't have that kind of aura of fear that
right,
Speaker
right.
Madigan seems to have.
Much more approachable, much easier to get to talk to. Okay, real quick, 10 seconds. Lori Lightfoot, the fall veto session, what kind of a grade would you give her?
Oh, I hate giving out grades, but she did not get what she wanted this time.
No.
She wanted to get a change for the casino structure and for the real estate transfer tax. She got neither. Says she'll be back in January to try again.
A.D. Quigg writes about that at Cranes. Check it out at chicagobusiness.com. A.D., great to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you.